Hello, and welcome to Blood, Sweat, and Smears, a podcast produced by Machion Diagnostics. In this podcast series, we will be discussing thrombosis and hemostasis from the perspective of our host, benign hematologist, and medical director of Machion Diagnostics, Dr. Brad Lewis. Please remember to subscribe and leave a review. With that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Lewis. Brad, take it away.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Smears, the podcast series from Machion Diagnostics. This is Brad Lewis, the medical director of Machion. Today, I wanted to talk a little bit about diagnosis of HIT. We have a previous podcast where we've looked at HIT and its diagnosis overall. But in particular today, I wanted to address some questions that have come up recently about how to interpret some of this testing and also the role of functional testing, the HIPAA test. It's so-called HIPA for heparin-induced platelet aggregation. So let me take a step back here. What is heparin-induced thrombocytopenia, or from now on, what I'm going to call HIT? So most of the time, obviously, heparin is tolerated very well. Occasionally, when heparin binds to platelet factor 4, one of the contents of the alpha granules of platelets, when heparin binds to that platelet factor 4, it can change the antigenic structure, creating a neoantigen, which can, in some people, induce antibody formation of several kinds, although only the IgG antibodies can be pathogenic, because the pathogenicity comes when there's the formation of tetramers, of interlinking among the antibody heparin platelet factor 4 complexes, and then binding to endothelium, where it induces thrombosis, or to platelets, where it induces activation, and ultimately thrombosis. So it's really only the IgG antibodies we care about, and that's of some importance because the antibody wanes after a period of time, and there is an anamnestic response sometimes with these IgG antibodies. In general, this is most pathogenic when the ratio of heparin to platelet factor 4 is about 1:1. When there is an excess of heparin, that it dilutes out the complexes effectively so that you're unable to form those pathogenic tetramers. And at very low doses, obviously it's possible to be for the heparin concentration to be so low that it's simply not able to induce effective tetramer formation. Although on occasion, you will see HIT happening clinically in patients who are no longer on heparin, presumably this being maintained by other anionic complexes, other heparans or heparin-like substances in the body. Occasionally, this sort of phenomena can be induced in other ways, as for example, by some COVID vaccinations, which we covered in a different podcast, but so-called VITT, or vaccine-induced thrombosis and thrombocytopenia. All right, so to get back to this, HIT is antibody-mediated hypercoagulable state. We worry about it because it's a potentially very problematic finding, with about 50% of people with HIT developing thrombosis, and in some series, particularly if it's not recognized, with a 20% or more mortality. So it's clearly something where you want to make the diagnosis as fast as you possibly can. So how do you go about making this diagnosis? And really, there are three steps, at least in my simple-minded way of thinking about this. The first step is to think about the HIT. You should suspect it anytime you see new thrombocytopenia with more than a 50% drop, and be aware that not every case has that classic 50% drop. The drop can be smaller, but for most purposes, a 50% drop in the platelets or a platelet count less than 150,000, even if there's not been a 50% drop, should be enough to make you start to be concerned about possible heparin-induced thrombocytopenia and HIT. Development of thromboses in a patient on heparin, the development of skin lesions at subcutaneous heparin injection sites can be a sign of the antibody presentation, and any systemic reaction after receiving heparin, anaphylactoid, or really almost any sort of systemic infusion reaction type phenomena after receiving heparin can be enough to make you suspect that somebody has HIT. When you suspect it, the next thing you want to do is to do some sort of a clinical assessment. And the most common, certainly in this country, has been the so-called 4Ts, looking at thrombocytopenia, the timing of the thrombocytopenia. It should ideally be in that 5 to 10 day after initiation of heparin window. So you look at the timing of it, you look at the thrombocytopenia itself, as we talked about, you looked at the development of thrombosis, and then lastly, looking for any other, obviously the T in other is the second letter, not the first, but looking for any other possible causes of that thrombocytopenia. There are other scores that are out there. There's the so-called HEP score, the HIT expert probability score, which you can access online. That may work a little bit better, particularly for patients in the ICU where the 4T score has not worked well, in part because there's so many other possible causes. It tends to overestimate, actually, the risk in that setting. So you want to do some sort of an assessment. If a patient has a very low a priori probability on the 4T scale or the HEP scale, then you're probably done at that point and don't need to go on with any further testing of any sort. If it's not low, then you're going to need to move on with some kind of assessment. With a low 4T score, for example, the probability that this patient does not have HIT is in the 98% range. It's unlikely. Remember that when you do get that score, if things change clinically over the next number of days, you want to reassess the score and reconsider the need to do further testing. Assuming you come up with a non-low score on the 4T scale or whatever else you're using, you then want to move on to some sort of sensitive screening test. For the most part, that's an ELISA test, an antibody test for antiplatelet factor 4 antibodies. And this is done by taking platelet factor 4 heparin complexes and binding them to a plastic surface, basically, and then overlaying that with the patient's plasma, washing it off, and then overlaying that with markers, antibodies, for example, two human antibodies, which mark the antibodies that have bound to those heparin platelet factor 4 complexes. If that test, the ELISA test for platelet factor 4, it's commonly called, if that test comes back with a negative result, something less than 0.6, you're generally done with your screening. If, however, there's significant clinical discordance, if you get a negative ELISA test, but you had a high 4T score, for example, or this somehow doesn't ring true to you, you may want to move on to other testing, and we'll talk about that other testing in just a moment. If the optical density is higher than 1.5 or so, and you have a high 4T, you're done in most settings. Most people would stop at that point. In some institutions, some people believe that you should move forward, even in that setting, with further testing, which we'll talk about in a moment, just to confirm this. Why is that an issue? Because about 5 to 10% of the normal population has antiplatelet factor 4 antibodies that predate their receiving the heparin. In 0.3% of the population, those can actually be fairly high titer. Unclear why that is. It may be because of a neoantigen that's formed by platelet factor 4 binding to bacterial polysaccharides that are anionic, much like the heparin is. In any case, there are other ways to develop platelet antibodies that are non-pathogenic. So for that reason, many people would move on, if the ELISA is positive, to do a confirmatory functional test, remembering that something like 30 to 40% of the positive ELISA tests, depending on the titer, will ultimately turn out to actually be HIT, with the rest being non-pathogenic antibodies. So with the ELISA for platelet factor 4, you can get results that are either low, less than 0.6, positive, greater than 1.5, as we talked about a moment ago. You can also get results that are in between those two. Those always will require confirmation. Some people would argue that if the optical density is above 2, it's so likely that that test is going to be truly positive that you don't need to move on to functional testing. Many institutions believe, again, you should do the functional testing on everyone because of the possibility of false positives and the expense, both in terms of dollars and of increased risk for some patients, changing their management from heparin to other kinds of anticoagulants. But as the optical density goes up, the chance of it being positive clearly goes up. And in fact, on occasion, we do see very high optical densities and a negative confirmatory functional test. Again, if that happens, talk to us. There are things we can do, like running more platelets to try and be more clear about this. But in general, with a very high optical density, I would suggest proceeding as though it's a positive test, unless that's going to be extremely problematic. So what are you going to do for a more specific test. In general, you're going to move on to one of the functional assays. That is what you want to show, is that these antibodies are not only able to bind to heparin platelet factor 4, but they're able to induce platelet aggregation. So they're functional tests of platelet activation or aggregation that are done. The tests that are done are much more specific for pathogenic HIT antibodies, but they're less sensitive. There are two tests that are commonly available in this setting. One, what's called the SRA, or the serotonin release assay. In this country, in the United States, this has been the gold standard test, if you will, and it's performed by radioactively labeling the contents of the granules and then looking for that granule release after these loaded platelets have been exposed to the patient's plasma. This is a somewhat difficult to perform test, and handling the radioactivity can cause some issues in labs, so that more and more people have been moving over to the HIPAA test, H-I-P-A, the heparin-induced platelet aggregation test. In Germany, almost exclusively, I believe, the testing that's done. In most of Europe, HIPAA has become the standard testing, although SRA is still done in some places. But HIPAA is performed by mixing platelets. The most sensitive way to do it is to use washed platelets, but mixing washed donor platelets with the patient's plasma, and then looking for changes in the optical density as the platelets aggregate, clarifying the solution. You decrease the optical density, you increase the transmission of light through the fluid as the platelets clump up into larger and larger clumps. Classically, and this is done using a no heparin solution. There should be no spontaneous aggregation. And using a low heparin solution, at Matcheon, we use two different low concentrations, which we believe somewhat increases the sensitivity of the assay. And one or both of those should be positive. And then a high supratherapeutic level of heparin. At that supratherapeutic level, remember what I said earlier, when you have too much heparin, you actually make it hard for these tetramers to cause platelet aggregation. So what you should see is no clumping once again with the supratherapeutic concentration of heparin. This can be particularly useful on the uncommon occasion where you see spontaneous platelet aggregation and don't know what to do then next. If that spontaneous aggregation goes away with a high concentration of heparin, it's very likely that that's true HIT, as opposed to simply an untestable sample, which is what we would say if it aggregates both with the high heparin concentration and with no heparin. These are simply platelets which are spontaneously aggregating in this patient. Sometimes we can get around that using other donor platelets, by the way. So why would one choose one over the other? Generally, I think labs choose to use HIPAA over SRA because it's easier to perform. It's a bit faster to perform, and just that. I think earlier studies have all suggested that HIPAA and SRA have very similar overall results, very similar sensitivity and specificity, with, again, very high specificity and moderate sensitivity in the 80%-ish range. Some recent studies coming out have suggested that HIPAA may be more sensitive in some settings, particularly in patients on cardiac bypass. In one recent small study that was a series of quality samples sent out to several countries for a small international study, they found that there was the samples that were performed using HIPAA seemed to be more likely to be positive and in concordance with what was expected both clinically and by the very high titers on the preceding ELISAs. We do increase the sensitivity of our HIPAAs by using washed platelets as well as platelet donors which have been selected because of their sensitivity. So again, I think that's really the punchline. If a patient comes in, you want to have a high index of suspicion for thinking about HIT with all the clinical findings that I mentioned earlier. Often you'll find, obviously, there are other things causing the thrombocytopenia or even the systemic reactions occasionally. But if you suspect it, you want to at least move on to doing the 4T in your mind after you've clinically assessed them using some sort of validated scale, 4T or HEP. You want then to move forward with the ELISA testing. You want to ask for the titer of your ELISA testing. If the titer is above 2, it's extremely likely to be positive. If the titer is below 0.6, it's extremely unlikely to be positive. Be aware that there are occasional cases of ELISA negative but functional and clinical HIT positivity. So If you have a very high a priori probability and you get negative ELISA testing, it may be worthwhile proceeding with functional testing. If the testing is anything other than negative, you're going to want to proceed with functional testing. If it's in the intermediate range, the functional testing can go either way. 20-30% of those patients will have positive functional testing generally. If the testing is above 1.6, the likelihood becomes very high that it will be positive. And above 2, it becomes very high. But again, there are cases where despite the high ELISA, you will get a negative functional test. That gets to be problematic. That gets to be a little bit of an issue because there are also rare cases where patients are clearly clinically positive for HIT, but come back with negative functional testing. So that ends up being a clinical call. We can talk about it. There are things we can do to sometimes clarify things a bit if we need to. And often my suggestion is if there's not a very strong reason to continue on heparin, simply stop the heparin, begin an alternate anticoagulant. And obviously we have more and more of those these days. All right, with that, I think we're done. And again, probably the real punchline with these kinds of cases, if you have issues, give us a call. Phone number is always available at the bottom of every lab slip. I'm very happy to answer questions about the testing. Thank you very much, and we'll see you again soon on Blood, Sweat, and Smears.
That's it for us here at Blood, Sweat, and Smears, a podcast produced by Maecheon Diagnostics, your reference lab and CRO specializing in thrombosis, hemostasis, and rare disease. Thank you for listening. And if you have a question or comment or there's a topic you'd like Dr. Lewis to speak to, please send us an email to bloodsweatandsmears@macheondiagnostics.com. That's MACHAON diagnostics.com. You can follow Maecheon at Twitter at MaecheonDX. Be sure to subscribe to stay in the know, share this podcast with clinicians you think might appreciate it, and we hope you'll join us next time here at Blood, Sweat, and Smears.